Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be asked to talk at this session. I'm happy to be last because I think you've heard some great talks about the particular aspects and foci for epidemiology going forward. My remarks are really going to be, I would say, more general. And I've taken this little alliteration trick here to make 3 points. I'm really going to make 4 points in this presentation. And it's really a call to action for epidemiologists. For those of you that have the leadership gene or the collaboration gene, this is for you. And I think that I'm assuming that I'm speaking mainly to epidemiologists and what I see as the future for the discipline and the change and the sort of context in which we're going to work. It's really my personal perspective, but I think it's shared by many. It comes from my experience in research. I was a sort of practicing epidemiologist for about 20 years at Kaiser Permanente in Oakland and at the Northern California Cancer Center. I helped lead the epidemiology program at the National Cancer Institute during a 5-year period. And I thought a lot about the nature of modern science and where it's going. So my thesis is that we're doing fine, basically. I think that epidemiology will grow in its importance as a central set of methods and a unique perspective toward scientific discovery and applications in population health. I think epidemiologists in general have a very unique perspective on health, which is probably not shared by many other disciplines. So they can play a critical role in not only doing their thing, what we do, but in uniting scientists, professionals, and others in a transdisciplinary approach to solving many of these important problems that you've just heard about. Okay, so we need to be very agile about attacking these problems that Roberta and the two Elizabeths have presented to us. Let me start with something that we developed or adopted at the National Cancer Institute, Barbara Reimer and I, back in 98 when we formed the Division of Cancer Control and Population Science. This was in turn adopted from a Canadian group, the Committee on Cancer Control, the National Cancer Institute of Canada. But what I want to point out is that it's served the purpose over time, still working, and it doesn't necessarily have to be just for cancer we're talking about, but I'd like to suggest that epidemiologists work in all aspects of this model. Fundamental research or basic research is discovery research. So that's when we're doing basic etiologic research and applying our techniques there. Intervention research is when we apply what we know about science and biology to change something, whether it's a drug development or behavior development or some place where we're trying to intervene to improve the public health or individual health. And then finally, in the upper part of this oval is surveillance research. So most epidemiologists are very dependent upon registries and data sets to generate hypotheses, but also to tell us how we're doing. So discovery science tells us what we know. Intervention science tells us what to do. Surveillance science tells us how we're doing and where to go next. Knowledge synthesis in the middle of all this helps us with decision making. We use tools like systematic reviews, meta-analysis, and so forth to tell us really what the body of knowledge is that we have to work with. And then we apply that in program delivery, policy, and other forms of knowledge integration. Elizabeth Barrett Connor put delivery as one of her final items in her bullet slide there with a big question mark next to it. This is going to be my fourth point. I think it's a very important piece that we need to work in. So the first of these 4 points is really what's happening. These are all things which I feel are big deals. They're all big movements in science, the funding of it, the thinking around it, and how do epidemiologists fit within it. The first one's translational science. everyone's heard this word. Most epidemiologists are sensitive to the fact that the primary interpretation of translational science is in sort of the bed-to-bedside mode, the drug development mode, but that it really means much more than that. And it's not only T1 translation, but T2 translation, as the clinical and translational science awards or centers that the NIH is supporting have defined it. And in T2 research, we're really aiming at adopting best practices from biology and medicine into the broader community, and epidemiologists are critical in this role. Actually, if you look at the things that are required by these roadmap, this particular large roadmap initiative, the CTSAs, epidemiology comes in some very practical ways in terms of design and biostatistics and clinical research and ethics. Also, in terms of pilot and collaborative translational studies in the clinic, community engagement, how to get knowledge out into the community and engage the community in the science process, and then also in the training of clinical and translational scientists. So epidemiology involved in all of this. And I think there are really few disciplines, as I said before, where the applications are obvious in all aspects of the translational process. So you heard examples, but just think through all the different types of epidemiologic subspecialization, some of which I've listed here. What other discipline has that kind of perspective, that kind of scope to go from the gene to policy? Not very many, I would submit. So I think that epidemiologists are critical to this translational movement, this translational research enterprise. The second and related idea is team science. Basically, we're talking there about collaboration, large-scale collaboration. And we have observed, I think, in the last 10 or 15 years, a shift from the traditional entrepreneurial R01 type of research into team science. It's not a complete shift, nor should it be. I mean, there will always be a place for individually initiated research and creative exercises by individuals, but I think we're seeing much more movement toward tackling the kinds of big problems that we have, pediatric obesity, health disparities, environmental impact of chemicals, etc., through team science. And here I think epidemiologists are critical because their ability to see the big picture. The way we're trained gives us a sense of how disease works in populations. So we're able to understand the biologic underpinning of a disease, its clinical manifestations, and how it impacts the population. So again, this is where leadership and involvement, I think, play out for epidemiologists. So in teams, the more they become a prevalent feature of how we do science, epidemiologists should be leaders. Epidemiologists should be key people in the mix. The third area, the third point, is the idea of transdisciplinary science. Transdisciplinary science, as distinct from multi or interdisciplinary science, is defined as science where you have multiple disciplines working together on a common problem, pediatric obesity, let's say, and using a common conceptual model from their respective disciplines, but as a way of defining a new scientific approach. So you're looking for something in the interstices between disciplinary approaches that can generate new paradigms, new knowledge, new ways of seeing a problem. And the result of all this are new theories and new methods that you wouldn't expect to come from an individual discipline. This is, again, another place where we're seeing a large number of initiatives coming from the NIH and foundations, such as the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. To name a few here, we have the Transdisciplinary Tobacco Use Research Centers. Well, you can read the names, but the problems we're talking about here are tobacco addiction, poor communication, health disparities, and obesity. And These transdisciplinary initiatives are providing funding for all sorts of disciplines, but importantly, epidemiologists in the mix to tackle what we've identified as important societal public health problems. The fourth and final point I'm going to call knowledge integration, but you could also call it dissemination and implementation, or knowledge exchange, or knowledge transfer. It's the whole problem of how you take what we've learned in science, in biomedical science, and you apply it to useful applications in society. That is not something we're really well trained to do. This activity goes back to Everett Rogers and the diffusion of innovations and other earlier works, but it's receiving a lot more attention now and funding from the NIH and other sources. And the trick is for epidemiologists to not only work with the disciplines with which they are currently familiar, geneticists, clinicians, sociologists, but to take it a little step further and to say, okay, if we really want to make an impact on pediatric obesity and we understand the impact of the built environment, we need to be working with urban planners and architects and politicians and engineers. And you can say that for almost every problem that Roberta put up there on the list. Almost every problem that Roberta put up there on the list, we can't do it by ourselves. It requires a team, and it requires working together across disciplines. It's a real challenge. There's a lot of things to be said about its evaluation and its assessment as a successful approach, but in my opinion, this is the direction things are going, and I think epidemiologists are critical in the mix. So, actually, I would say it's extremely difficult to meet the challenge of modern population health, modern public health, without epidemiology. And so I think our future is bright if we're willing to stand up and take a swing at the ball. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hyatt. I realize that the time is late. It's almost 2 o'clock, but if anybody has any questions for our panelists, I think they'll stay here for another 5 minutes or so, and we can have some questions and discussion. Please.
Start a little bit again. What I touched upon at the very end, those health impact assessments, this is a new tool, and it's much like if you ever were to build a building, for example, especially here in California, you've got environmental impact assessments that you have to do. You have to talk about shadows, you have to talk about light, you know, wind, like all the different environmental impacts that a building will have. And it's a thought this health impact or health assessment impacts are really trying to look at that for non-health issues, things that are thought to be non-health issues, to start getting the health involved in that. So if someone wants to tear down a bunch of buildings and build a whole new set of condos, you could also sort of force a public health point of view on that. Will that be good for the public's health because you're getting rid of substandard housing which may have lead, for example, in the paint and things like that? On the other hand, will it be bad because maybe you're limiting diversity in the the area, and that a healthy community also, you know, requires diversity. And so I think we can start taking our epidemiologic tools and try to get them in, as you were saying, some of the areas which aren't so obviously health related, and show how they actually have a public health impact. And that's one of the things that these health impact assessments are trying to do and trying to look at. I don't know if other folks have answers to that.
Yes, please.
Vic Schoenbach, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I wonder, is there anything epidemiology can do to understand behavior of the leaders of society who foster some of the problems that we face? Public health problems that we deal with results from behavior of governments, corporations, and so on. And these are run by people who are not necessarily inherently evil. They're either thinking narrowly, they're greedy, they're not as intelligent as they need to be, or something like that. And if we have people whose behavior is irrational individually, we think of that as being a psychiatric issue. And I wonder if maybe behavior by people who are running the government and corporations and so on is sometimes could be put in that vein.
Nancy Krieger with Harvard School of Public Health. And I guess the question I wanted to frame was more that when you're talking about epidemiology and the problems that we work on, sometimes it becomes too simple to say there's complex methods and there's simple methods. I think it's actually what are the problems that we want to solve and use whatever the appropriate methods are to get at that. Because I think that there's some very basic work that we need to do in this country, let alone what we need to be doing in cooperation with other countries in epidemiology. And for example, if we really want to have proper monitoring of the health conditions in this country, we need a lot more that's put into public health infrastructure and public health surveillance, but also getting appropriate socioeconomic data, getting appropriate data on race ethnicity, getting things that are fundamental to understanding the health of the population. And I think when that's cast as somehow being simple, it's actually not. When we have to actually really work with sociologists to understand what these categories are, I think we just need to be very cautious. Things we may decide are simple are because we black box them and don't understand the complexity. I think every science has its complexities as well as its nuances, and what looks simple from one perspective is extremely difficult from another. So I think that if we're going to be doing this work of communicating across other disciplines and engaging with them about what are the social determinants of health, or even Vic, with your question, there are people who actually study systematically in political sociology how organizations, how institutions, how governments function and don't reduce it to a question of simply behavior of individuals. There's a lot that's out there that epidemiologists could engage with, but I think it is important that we are very clear on the unique contributions we give from the base of a population science that spans biological and social knowledge. But I think we just need to be very, very cautious about how we present ourselves. You said that it's not just that the media is the problem, that it's us, but I think when we're thinking about how us is the problem in there, it's about how we present ourselves and understand our integration. So I guess the question that I would just also frame is that I just think that if we go forward on saying we're here to improve the population health, I just think that with all the work that's been said today as well, it's got to be framed not only about improving population health overall, but also reducing or eliminating health inequities. The two have to be brought together hand in hand to meet any of the challenges that are being discussed and to help us engage with the many other groups that are actually out there extremely active and trying to make a difference in the real conditions in which people live and work and suffer and die. So I think that we just need to have that consciousness. So I just want to sort of flag those things, because if we don't frame it this way, if you get this position of, well, it's simple. Well, you know, C.E.A. Winslow, who's one of the people that we should venerate, is one of the leading public health figures of the early 20th century and also in epidemiology, was saying that, you know, in his work on modern public health, which was published in the 1920s, that it's just a simple, we know what to do about many of these infectious diseases. It's just a simple question now of implementation. Implementation has never been simple, and if we epidemiologists don't understand why it's not simple, why it's not simple to change the societal factors that produce inequity and health inequities, we're not going to make much better progress than was done in the time of C.E.A. Winslow.
Hi, I just have a very quick comment. My name's Elizabeth Wright. I'm with the Public Health Agency of Canada based in Newfoundland. And it's around the issue of an impact assessment of a program that you're going to deliver. We have a population in Newfoundland that is smaller communities are depopulating in favor of the one urban area that we have. And so people in schools are having to amalgamate from further and further away. And from a purely transportation education point of view, it makes sense to take children from 7 or 8 small communities and bus them to a larger community and keep one school open, because you can get teachers for one school. But the impact of that is that children are on buses for 1.5 hours, 2 hours a day back and forth, and those children get no opportunity to take part in after-school recreational programs. They're sitting on a bus for a really long time. So that's a very simple sort of illustration of the complexity of the problem when you don't have everybody at the table saying, whoa, whoa, wait a minute, that's a good idea, but it's also not such a good idea. And my other comment is, who wants to come to Toronto next spring for a conference? Anybody here? I'll leave my card. It was a great presentation. Thanks.
Hi, Stephen Marcus, the National Cancer Institute. I just want to do a little bit of clarification. When you say the word simple versus complex, we're not using it in terms of Webster. So generally what the system scientists, a simple system is one that reductionism works. You take something complex, you break it down into its component pieces, and then you study each piece in isolation, then you add up all the effects, and you get reality. Now, there are many things in biology and epidemiology where that approach will work. But what we're now finding is that there are many, many problems where that will not work, where you think reductionistically and you break things in pieces and you add them back up, you don't get reality. So the fields that are now educating us into how to look at these things are complex systems, complex adaptive systems. So it's not simple versus complex in the English definition, because the measurement error, as Nancy says, the measurement issues are usually incredibly complex in the English definition in any of these sorts of things, but it's the sort of modeling approach that Roberta was talking about. So just want to clarify that. And we're doing tons of that at the National Cancer Institute. To put in a little plug, thanks, Bob.
Leslie Davidson, Columbia. I just wanted to ask, in terms of education, the implications, say, for doctoral education and for the dissertation in particular, because the kind of work that you are all talking about, transdisciplinary and all of that, does not lend itself easily to a uni-person dissertation. And and so I just want, you know, to open that up. No, but our doctoral students would clap too. No, because it's challenging. How do we put the old concept of a dissertation as the culmination of a doctoral education into the kind of models that you're all exploring and telling us we need to be challenged by?
I think Bob got at this very nicely, and I was glad he did. But, you know, we've talked about, we've written about, we've thought about kind of these issues of big science, the complexity of what we're now trying to reflect in our science. And I do think that from a structural academic perspective, academia has not grappled with this at all. I mean, I'm not hearing presidents of universities saying, you know, guys, we really need to rethink our systems and think about, you know, really how do you value these things? How do you promote people through these systems? How do you train people in this new world? I'm not hearing that discussion at all. But boy, I really think it's past time to have those discussions.
So
So I've been worrying about this too at UCSF, where we're developing a PhD program. UCSF is known for its sort of interdisciplinarity, and we're finding it's not difficult in planning the PhD program to involve other graduate programs. Systems biologists have already sort of set the stage for interaction of disciplines within the skin, so to speak. And the job that we're talking about is bringing in disciplines that work outside the skin, sociology, anthropology, law, politics, urban planning, etc. And we're making use of courses at the business school, at the engineering schools, at the Institute for Human Genetics, to give options to graduate students in epidemiology to work in other settings, other labs, quote unquote, to see how epidemiology can be applied to problem solving in the setting of other disciplines. So it's an experiment, it's risky, but we're undertaking just that challenge.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to cut off questions because I see there are people at the door wanting to get in. But thank you so much for participating. It looks like epidemiology is not dead. The future is bright. It's not dead.